From the Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute studios at Everbank Field, 1010 XL 92.5 FM presents Jaguars Today with your hosts Mike Dempsey and Tony Smith.
All right, welcome aboard, everybody. Happy Wednesday, brought to you by our friends at Metro Rooter. Jaguars Today live at Everbank. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony here with you, and plan to be joined by Brent Martineau at some point. Does Franchi deal with this on a daily basis? He probably does, is my guess. Don't you think?
I would think so, yeah.
Martineau rolls in with a two-piece chicken dinner from Dixie, and you get the call a few minutes before the show. You guys want anything? No, Brent, we don't want anything. Thank you for asking. We're going to do a radio show coming up now. So we'll get the band back together. We did a show together for, the three of us for about a year and a half, something like that.
Something like that, yeah.
It was a lot of fun prior to the Jaguars Today setup that we've got going on now. And yesterday, you know, it's funny how news works. Ryan O'Halloran was the first to tell you publicly that Jerry Sullivan was not going to be retained by the Jags. We saw Jerry in here about 9 o'clock yesterday morning and talked to him about, knew he was on his way out, but you know, again, we've said it many times. We're not in the news breaking business here, and it wasn't official at that point in time, and it was going to come out, so there was no great need to get it out there.
No,
but I did in doing a little investigating yesterday. Talking to Jerry Sullivan, he says I'm never going to use the word retire. You're never going to hear, even if I'm not working, you're not going to hear me say I'm retired. I think he's one of those guys that think if you stop and slow down, you don't have as much going on. You don't have as much to live for, right? That was Bobby Bowden's fear for years at Florida State. What's going to happen if I retire? Am I going to die, right, if I don't have something to show up for every day? So I think Jerry Sullivan's still a very sharp guy, a very energetic guy. He's in great shape. We see him around here all the time, and won't see him around here anymore now. And, he said, look, people are going to call it a firing, whatever. It's just kind of a parting of the ways. He had taken a step back from the hands-on aspect of coaching the wide receivers a little bit last year anyway. From that standpoint, I guess it's not all that surprising. And look, quite frankly, if you're just going to judge it on merit, the wide receivers as a whole took a step back this year, right? I mean, Marquise Lee had the best year of his three-year career, but Allen Robinson certainly took a step back. Allen Hurns struggled with drops before the injuries really set in.
Rashad Green was a zero.
Right. So, from that standpoint, it shouldn't be that shocking that many coaches are not going to be retained on the offensive side of things. Martineau here with us right now. Are you Dan Hicken's boss? We wanted to determine what's the official title you hold down over at CBS 47 and Fox 30.
I would never characterize it that way.
We would, though.
We just like to try to get them to work.
And we want to stir up some discontent. Oh, is that it? is it an issue with Dan showing up on time?
Not at all.
Over there? We're reminiscing about the days of the light at Hogan Road as well.
That light's a beast, man. I mean, that's legit.
We can always count on you for about 110.
Today I was tracking nice. I almost sent you a picture and then a little cluster on the going over the heart.
Oh, so, is that right?
Yeah, they got a little down to one lane there.
Oh.
So,
well, that,
even when I'm tracking right,
that could be
it
a little sticky.
Wrong.
I understand. Hey, look, we appreciate you're pulling all kinds of triple duty here because you're at the national championship game on Monday night, right?
Yep.
Pretty late.
Yep.
Covering that. I heard you on the Franchi show yesterday, and I presume you'll be back on there this afternoon. And
yes, sir.
We're making you do triple duty here.
Oh, so. Not making. Talking Jags. A fun time. It's a good week.
It is a good
story
week.
Storyline has
it?
Changed.
Right.
And it should be a lot of fun tomorrow.
You would think. I saw you repost on Twitter the little snippet from the press release.
Nice touch.
I really was a subtly well-done touch there. The 10 a.m. press conference begins at 9:55. Dan in Crosstalk just said, what do we expect from Tom? And I do think some of that, that kind of Coughlin – is this going to be a Coughlin building from that standpoint? What do you think about that? Like, he's going to kind of set that tone, that same thing that, hey – if you're not 5 minutes early, you're late, that kind of thing, attention to detail, holding guys accountable, and, because that's a symptom of going above and beyond. Now, all that is saying to these guys, take some response. Don't say, here's the parameters, here's what I have to do. Go beyond what you have to do and be a professional.
Well, I think it's interesting with the press release and the 9:55 and having a little fun with it.
Right.
Shows that, you can be like that and still have some fun. I think you associate with
20 years later. Yes.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I think you associate that style though with not much fun. right? A lot of smiling, not a lot of, you know, laughing, and unless there's a lot of winning going on. And I get that, but I also think people around here have to remember that 2002 was a long time ago, and Tom Coughlin spent 12 years with the New York Giants, and there are many accounts, and I covered Tom up in New York for a handful of years, and there are many accounts of how he changed a bit as a head coach. And, you know, not necessarily his timing, but his relationship with players and maybe wasn't the same guy that he once was. You know, not totally different, but, you know, I guess did have a little more fun, you know, with the Giants at times and some of those players. And some of that was forced, you know, at times because of threats by the players to the league. I remember covering those stories with Michael Strahan and the NFLPA and all that. So I do think this is somewhat of a different guy in charge than he was, but you are who you are too. So there's an element of that. And it should be interesting to see how much he filters through this building. And you hit it. Marone is very much of that ilk. I mean, this tree is all the same. You know, it's Parcells, it's Belichick, it's Coughlin, it's Marone. I spent a lot of time yesterday looking at that tree and where Marone really fell off the tree with Herm Edwards' side of it and also with Parcells' side of it. And it's pretty fascinating to see some of the people they've been aligned with in the past, some of the success and some of the styles, which certainly equate to what Coughlin and Marone are.
Do you think they needed that kind of change, that polar change in attitude from Gus? I mean, we've heard a lot of the players suggest things along those lines. And Brian Walters came out on Monday and told Tony and I that they need a hard ass to come in here and coach them a little bit. You feel like they needed something like that?
Yeah, I think it will be welcome. If I'm being completely honest, I thought they needed an in-between from a coaching standpoint. And that's why I really thought Mike Smith might have been the guy, because I think he could have been Tom Coughlin at times and presented that edge, but also had a little bit of Gus Bradley in him. So I thought he was in the middle, and everybody kept talking about tweak, tweak, tweak. This is no longer a tweak. It might look like it from a head coaching standpoint because Marone was in the building. But this is pretty big overhaul. I mean, this is going from lining up helmets with Mike Mularkey to a fun, loose kind of atmosphere with Gus Bradley, at least from a perception standpoint and from everything we can gather. And now it's going back to the other way, turning the dial the other way. Once again. So I think it's pretty drastic. And, you know, was it needed? Maybe. The win now mentality, all that stuff people talk about. I do think this, Mike. I think this organization, whether it was Josh McDaniels, whether it was Mike Smith, whether now it's Marone, I think with better quarterback play and one more year with this group, I think they were going to be pretty good next year regardless. I think they're going to be. I think this thing was a year behind schedule, if you will. If you presume better quarterback. He can't play like he played this year. And you're going to add more parts with the millions of dollars you have in cap space. And so I think they were.
Are you saying he can't play like that, or he can't play like that and expect to be successful?
He can't play like that and then be successful.
Gotcha.
We know that.
Right.
I mean,
he's capable of playing.
He played like it. So he's got to play so much better. But I also think this year of experience going through some of this stuff and also just saying, hey, now Telvin Smith's going to be in year four and guys are going to be in year five and six rather than years two and three and four. I think there is an element of that that is just real. And I think they're going to be good no matter what. Now, will this ratchet it up, speed up that process even more? And can you take it from maybe a 7-8 win season? Can Tom Coughlin and Doug Marone flip that to a 9 or 10 games win season? I think that's possible.
You're really holding back because I figured you'd come in here 14-2 all the way. I think, you know, I expected that out of you. I think by the end of the next 2 hours, we can get you to at least, you know, 12 wins for 2017.
I think that's one thing about this fan base. They're smart enough now that everything is wait and see.
I
know that.
You
talk
right
to them every day. I think everything. Now, the Coughlin stuff certainly adds that. That will spike a little bit in their mind, but it's only so much he can do from that position, you know, from an on-the-field perspective, once he makes some of the moves and decisions along with Dave Caldwell, and then they've got to let it ride with Doug Marone. And Marone, listen, over time, has still been a 500 coach.
Right.
And 9-7 Buffalo, you can talk about some of the pieces he had, but we still have to wait and see a little bit on Marone, and I think that's the hesitation right now in the fan base.
Yeah. All right, Brent Martineau in studio here with us, and you can get on board at 641-1010 on the phone lines and on the text line, driven by Duval Ford. Today's question of the day, brought to you by the Tom Bush family of dealerships, is your reaction to the retention of Todd Wash as defensive coordinator for the Jacksonville Jaguars. Certainly, there have been several players complain about the way they were used defensively this year. So get your reaction on board on Twitter at MD_1010XL, at 1010XL Fat Tony. Martin, oh, it's been a while since I've done the Twitter handle. What is it off the top of your head?
At Brent A.S. Jacks.
Ah, there it is.
Brent A.S. Jacks.
Old school. Brent A.S. Jacks. I haven't done that one in a while. But you can tweet all
of
us.
Don't worry, millions of others already know it.
I know they do. I know they do. Hit us up on the Jaguars Today Facebook page as well. Brought to you every Wednesday by Metro Rooter. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony, and Brent Martino together again here. It's Jaguars Today on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
From the Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute studios at Everbank Field, more Jaguars Today on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
It's got that mid-afternoon feel to it this morning. With Brent Martino back in the fold, Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony. We'll see you at the Super Bowl, right? You going
That's
for
right.
the whole week?
Yeah, we'll be there Monday to Monday.
Monday, you like the Monday media day?
I don't mind it. I like the nighttime thing. I think it's kind of cool. But I'd rather it not be on Monday just from a logistics standpoint
right.
for us.
Because, well, that's part of the reason. They're trying to force everyone to get in by Monday at the latest.
And spend more money in Houston or wherever the Super Bowl
is. Or through the NFL, booking their hotels and things like that. I mean, they're pretty proud of their hotels based on what they ask you, even at the discounted NFL
rate. But you know, Tuesday – well, for you guys, it'll be good. You gather information. You can run a lot of interviews and things. But Tuesday's a dead day there at the Super Bowl.
Absolutely.
Wednesday has even become somewhat of a pretty slow day over the last few years, in my opinion. And then it really picks up on that third. Like Wednesday afternoon
Thursday
is the peak day.
And then Friday about mid-afternoon, you hope you have your work done.
It's about a 48-hour window, right? At least last year I really felt like that. Now, I don't know if it was because it was San Francisco, but I really felt that window shrunk in terms of how the place was hopping and the buzz was really about going on. And we'll see about Houston. I've got to wonder about some of these celebs and everything. I know it's a Super Bowl, but does Houston do a lot for people?
No. I can't think of a reason to go to Houston. I'm sure. Look, I've never been there except to go to football games, and it just is this big sprawling concrete metropolis of long ride from the airport to the state. You know, like I don't have any interest.
It's not doing much for me.
I'm sure it's a fine city. You know what I mean? I'm not Trent Dilfer here telling you it's the armpit of the world. Tony will tell you though. My initial reaction to any change is just furious anger. How dare the NFL make this Monday night last year? And then I was like, oh, we do have the whole show in the can for tomorrow, you know? It's going to be pretty good,
it's
actually.
One less day of not having to kind of slog through a kind of slow day on Radio Row.
It's true. Tuesday was always awkward because, you know, you try to go can you do it a morning session? Can you get a bunch of interviews, get them on the air? When our show fell, it was always an awkward thing. So now, you know, you get one chance, we do, to really spend one-on-one FaceTime with any players who are playing in the Super Bowl. You try to look for a few local angles, either former Jaguars or Gators or Seminoles or Canes or whatever the case may be. You know, you do what you do. It's a Super Bowl week.
And you'll be at the media party. I know that.
Oh, you're damn right.
Oh, yeah.
That's Tuesday night, right?
We got to wait to see what teams are announced there or make the Super Bowl this year, because last year I did recruit Malik Jackson.
He did.
He did. That's right, on the Monday media day.
Yeah. So we'll see if there's any target of opportunity at the media day this year. If the Cowboys make it, I already know who it is. But
yeah, he likes Ronald Leary.
Leary, I'm all
right. That's not bad.
I get to. Jason Pierre-Paul is not going to be there.
No, but
at least in a playing capacity.
Right, that is definitely.
But he might be on Radio Row. You never know.
I hope so.
So you got to believe that there's some linkage there, right?
Well, I mean, if they had a good relationship, Coughlin and JPP. Who wouldn't want to add Jason Pierre-Paul to this roster? Yeah, I would.
I would. Sir,
you know, maybe Dante Fowler. I don't know. You know, maybe.
You need a veteran guy. I think they'll draft another one, and I think you also need a veteran one that you go sign. Yeah, now, whether it's that big, high-priced one, I know it's risky, but I think it's time, right? One thing they stress with this week, it is time, man.
It is time to go.
And it's go time. And look, only 3-year deal for these guys.
Right.
That means it's really go time.
Yeah, that's a good point, because Sean McDermott, who – it's so funny, the reporting on this. A few weeks ago, Coughlin, the front runner in Buffalo, right? If they fire Rex Ryan. Then they fire him, interim coach Anthony Lynn, all but certain to become the next Buffalo Bills full-time head coach.
I was like locked in.
Right. And then, well, I really wonder, I was saying it all that week, you get plastered by a terrible Jets team, even without Tyrod Taylor, you know? Your defense didn't show up. They didn't respond for him in that circumstance. And now it's Sean McDermott, the defensive coordinator of the Carolina Panthers, who was really not in this whole pipeline of people that were being discussed for all these openings. And he's getting a second interview with the Bills. The feeling is he will get the job and get a five-year deal. You're right. So this is like, hey, this is like Chi Khan saying, okay, I'm going to invest in you, but I need to see some pretty quick returns.
I think he's tired of spending money on guys that aren't coaching. You know, I mean, with the Mularkey and Gene Smith thing for a couple of years, even Gus and this staff will be another year on the pay docket. And I think he's tired of doing that, number one. But I do think, listen, if they got Josh McDaniels in here, that was going to be a five-year deal. You know, I don't think that was going to be a three-year deal.
Right.
I think
part
Marone
of that is
being here.
The market, right? Yeah. I mean, if the more options you have, the more you can get out of wherever you settle.
Yeah. And Marone, listen, Marone, although he's been interviewed at places, I'm not convinced he would have been hired anywhere else.
Oh, I'm not either.
I mean, this is a little bit of a landing spot for Doug Marone, and therefore, at least with his past in the last few years and some of the stories and things that have gone on, he almost had to say, he doesn't have a ton of leverage to say, I want a five-year deal.
Oh, of course not.
You know, I mean, so the three-year deal makes sense. But back to the point of they got to go spend this money. They've got to go get more veterans from a JPP perspective and maybe even a couple other holes to get more veterans in the locker room. And I think that message will be clear tomorrow that they need W's and they need them fast.
All right, let's go to the phones for the first time this morning. 641-1010, the number. Steve on the north side, first up on Jaguars Today. Good morning, Steve.
How's it going, fellas?
Going well. What's up?
Good. Yeah, I don't trust this Wash thing, man. For me, first off, no coordinator Gus Bradley has had never performed well in consecutive seasons. Me personally, I felt like Gosh was, I ain't going to say all of it with him. I feel like some of it might have been from Gus or whatnot. And I don't know. It's just, it doesn't, this is kind of crazy for this to happen. And I don't know, man. It's, you can't, it's like, is this a fairy tale? Is this a story? What is going on here? So,
see, I think you feel like a lot of people, Steve, a lot of Jaguar fans, like, I don't know. You know, like, you don't necessarily hate it. Some probably do. You don't necessarily love it. And it's like, really? We're 3-13 and we're going to retain how many coaches off of this staff? That's the sense I get from Steve anyway.
Yeah, and I think it's that's part of it. We know that 45 minutes on Monday, right, when Marone, and then you assumed Wash would stay and Hackett would stay, and everybody was like, are you kidding? And then Coughlin news came out, and that was like, okay.
Right.
You know, that saved it from a fan perspective. So that's kind of nullified some of the response. But listen, if you're Todd Wash and you bring that resume into Marone or Shad Khan or Tom Coughlin even, and you say, we went from here to here and here to here defensively. I mean, it's a pretty good it's a pretty good resume. What the players are saying is
I'm not
irrelevant,
forget what the players
the
are saying.
From that standpoint.
I listened to what Jeff Prosser said this morning, and I tend to agree with him that, okay, you're ranked sixth in defense. What does that really mean when you're 26th or whatever in points allowed? You don't create turnovers. Your pass rush is so inconsistent. You know, you're not seen as a big pass rush team, constantly affecting the quarterback. You know, how big of a deal is that when you're giving up a bunch of points, you're losing a bunch of games? It's you'd rather have it than not.
And blowing fourth quarter leads.
Blowing fourth quarter leads, Tony. Thank you. I mean, there are all these different things that the one thing that I'm going to say about Todd Wash, because I'm not going to sit here and try to convince anybody it was the right move.
Mm-hmm.
Time will tell if it's right move. But my opinion is, what he has to do is he has to, as Jeff said, and I agree with that, be more aggressive. They need to blitz more. They need to blitz more on early downs. You cannot play. Don't give me this. Well, it works in Seattle. We don't have Earl Thomas. We don't have Richard Sherman. We don't have Michael Bennett. We don't have Cliff Averill and all these guys.
Bobby Wagner.
It works. They're loaded with Pro Bowlers. Okay. Yeah, we got some budding young talent here. That's great. But it's not the same when you don't have the same personnel. So be a little bit more aggressive, affect the quarterback. You saw what Houston did this weekend against Connor Cook. They blitz him on practically every down for a stretch because That's what you do with young quarterbacks. Take a shaky quarterback and force him into making mistakes. Don't sit back and wait for him to make mistakes. I want to see him be more aggressive. I want to see him put his own stamp on this. I don't want to hear any more about Otto, Lotto, any of that nonsense.
Yeah, I don't think you will. Again, the personalities are different. They're best friends, but personalities are a little bit different, and styles are different.
Agree.
With Gus Bradley and Todd Wash. And I think Wash's style from a coaching perspective and in that room kind of fits more of the Marone and Coughlin that you might have the perception of. But, you know, if I'm Wash, I'm saying, well, we were, eighth in third down defense? Everybody
something
wants
like that,
to compare this defense to Seattle. Seattle's defense third down was not that good. You know, so they did some things, and I actually thought that Indy game in that fourth quarter would hurt Wash more than anybody else, even Marone or any from this job perspective, because I think it wasn't just Marone that might keep Wash. I think some other folks might have kept Wash if they got the job too, but it didn't turn out that way. I think, listen, again, if you take the resume for Wash, I think you can go in there and say we did this, we did that, and we also did it with a rookie basically in Dante Fowler, Yannick Ngakoue, Jalen Ramsey, who was only going to get better, and even playing at times Miles Jack and Sheldon Day. I mean,
it's
sometimes had five rookies playing on a defense, and you went from whatever it was, 30th to whatever the final ranking was. So,
Sixth. Again,
I think they're – I don't mind him staying at all. And, again, there's a revamp now of Walker and linebackers and everyone else. So I don't think it's as big a deal as everybody's making out. Neither is Hackett. To be honest with you, I thought Hackett did a pretty nice job in the final nine games with a struggling quarterback. And I think they found something there. And it might be best if they're going to just sit here one more year on Blake, it might be best for him to keep Hackett.
Right. I do think the organization feels that Blake was much more comfortable with Nathaniel Hackett, that a lot of the issues that, you know, the lack of continuity in the offense, a lot of issues. They put a lot of that on the feet of Greg Olsen, who was let go. And It's not like the offense was perfect when Hackett took over, but he was coming in the midst of it all. I think you'll see more of a commitment to the run game, which is what they were supposed to do this year. Mm-hmm. And, you know, halfway through the season, you look up and they're throwing the ball as much as anybody in the league. And I think even they were questioning what the hell's going on.
Yeah, they abandoned the run at times under Olsen early in games where they really shouldn't have or didn't plan on doing. Hackett's the same way. You go in there and you say, all right, in my final nine games, the numbers didn't balloon for Blake Bortles, but he looked a little better from the eye test against Kansas City and other examples. They ran the ball pretty well. And by the time this thing was wrapping up, they're on their sixth left guard. In the final 6 weeks of the season, they played four of the top six defenses in the NFL, and it looked a lot better. So
here's the thing, though. You know what?
They were on their fourth tight end.
You're gonna play good teams every week. Yeah. Enough, you know.
But I'm just saying, you're asking why, that's what these guys are going in with and saying, this wasn't as bad as it might have looked for Hackett and Wash. And I think ownership and GM Dave Caldwell saw that too.
You set yourself up, though, for easy target practice if it doesn't get off to a fast start, because the built-in criticism is you retain too many guys off a system or a culture that won nothing of any substance over the last few years, and why should we expect different results, because you have a lot of the same guys who have their fingerprints all over. Right, fair or not, that will be a criticism level, and it's going to be a hard one to counter if they get off to a 1-4 start in 2017. Let's go back to the phones and get Gary on the south side next up here on Jaguars Today. Good morning, Gary.
Good morning, gentlemen. First of all, as a Dolphins fan, I'm so proud that they were 1-4, able to win 9 out of the last 11 with Rashad Jones pouncing and all the injuries they had. Adam Gase, to me, is coach of the year in the NFL. I don't like the Doug Marone hiring simply because the bad taste, the way he left Buffalo, and Brett, you know, to me, this season, bad search of a guy who inspiration to derive inspiration and confidence, a team that sorely lacking in both under Gus's leadership. I think a Josh McDaniels, even Mike Smith, would have been a much better hire. And I think they kind of panicked, hired too quickly, and should have went through the process more. And I'm not confident that Ed Marone is the guy for the job. Thanks, guys.
That's fine. You don't have to be. I mean, you know, probably a lot of people feel that way. Mm-hmm. As far as him leaving Buffalo the way he did, Tony will back me up on this. I said at the time, I got no issue with it. This is before Doug Marrone was ever on this coaching staff.
Gotten smarter by the month, by the way, him getting out of that place.
Looking at this dysfunction of the situation, here's the deal. If you don't want to accept that it's a possibility that Doug Marrone might leave, don't put a clause in his contract that allows him to leave and walk out the door with $4 million. Is anybody giving Deshaun Watson grief for leaving Clemson, declaring for the NFL draft? Did he quit on his team? Or is it okay because he won the title and then he's allowed to go?
Because you're allowed to.
Oh, right. I mean, right. Well, player. LeBron James opts out of his deal all the time. In fact, that's the way he sets up his deal. So he can opt out of it and get more money and hold the team hostage for more money the next year. I mean, that's his business. Look, I get it. You don't have to like it. I just never understood why a guy exercising a clause in his contract, and he's never publicly said a negative word about the Buffalo Bills organization or even why. He said it's personal reasons. I'm not going to get into it. He didn't throw anyone under the bus. He took all the heat on himself. I don't hold that against him in the least bit. Now, if the roles were reversed and he left the franchise that I cared about succeeding and covering and all that stuff, maybe I'd feel the same way. So I get it if Bills fans are resentful of Doug Marrone, but for the public at large, say he quit. Well, you know, start looking at some of these situations. Ezekiel Elliott quit Ohio State to come to the National Football League a year early and play for the Dallas Cowboys. Are Cowboys fans upset with Ezekiel Elliott, that quitter? Yeah, we don't want to be associated with him. I doubt that's the case. So I know it's different because a coach usually isn't in a position to be able to do this. They don't have the luxury of this in their contract. He did. He exercised it. If you don't want him to do it, don't give him that liberty when you strike a deal with him. I'm sure he does not have an opt-out clause in his Jaguar contract.
I don't think so. Not like that one, at
not
least.
Like that
was
that
unbelievable.
One, right?
I agree with Tony, too. I think it has looked a little better for him in Buffalo. You asked earlier why Tom Coughlin's name was linked to Buffalo before. Anthony Lynn linked to Buffalo. Is it possible that that is too toxic of a situation for those guys even to entertain it anymore? Might not have been the Buffalo side,
right,
that said
be.
We're not. It might be Anthony Lynn and guys like that said, I'm not so sure I want to be involved in this because of what happened there. And Marrone does look a little better in that. I don't really think the Buffalo thing is as much of an issue for Marrone as it is sometimes the personality things that you hear with him from if you read up on it. You know, if former play, I'm telling you, there's like a 50-50 split. I mean, you and there's no like gray area.
They're,
you can either
right.
go,
yeah, Marrone they love or
is,
hate him.
I mean, the worst guy to ever be around, or really respect this guy.
Phenomenal
good football man,
guy.
The next Bill Parcells. The, you know, so where do you fall in that? And I think at the end of the day, Shad Khan, by the way, they didn't just jump into this. Shad Khan is an information guy. He gets as much information as he can and then makes a decision. So this wasn't a snap judgment. They panicked, anything like that. And I think he has guys on his behalf like Parcells, Peyton, Belichick that are saying this guy's a good football coach. It wouldn't be a bad hire.
There's a big article on Marrone that got reposted on ESPN.com that they did last off season that where
with
they
Merrill?
Went to his house. And
yeah.
You're right. And they interviewed
good
him.
Article.
And in that article, Tyler's been sending me quotes. I read the whole thing this morning. I saw Irish Jag posted a link to it on Twitter that, you know, Marcel Darius is like, this guy's terrible. You never knew where you stood. And you have other guys saying, you always knew exactly where you stood yes. with Doug Marrone. So you're right. I mean, it depends on the source that you listen to. I got to believe that, at least I do believe that he has respect of the guys in this locker room. I think, you know, and he's probably smart enough to have kept his head down a little bit over the last couple of years and knew he needed to, you know, fair or not, he probably did need to take a positional coaching gig for a couple of years mm-hmm. to get that taste of, hey, the last we heard of Doug Marrone, he was, quote, quitting on the Buffalo Bills.
I think he's worked on a little of that perception, too, from players, media, everywhere else. I think he's cognizant of it. And we can ask him this more, but I think that showed up in the last few weeks when he took over as an interim guy. That I said to somebody, that is not the guy
right.
that I just read about.
The gruff.
That was in Buffalo
yes.
for the last couple of years, or in Syracuse and getting ripped for 4 years. So, I mean, that is a different guy. Now, whether that's truthfully him and that's the way he'll run the ship, we'll see. This will be at times a divided locker room because of some of that. I don't think every player is going to like him, though, Mike.
Well, they don't have to.
No.
Do your job.
I bet it wasn't even close to 50-50 after 95 on Tom Coughlin.
Right.
Not even close to guys
right.
who
probably
liked
probably
him.
Probably 70-30 hated him.
Yeah.
Right? And then 96, oh, well, you know, all right, we tolerated him. And then, oh, you know what? This stuff actually works.
It's all about the W's,
it actually works. All right, you got to take a timeout. 641-1010 if you want to get on board a Metro Rooter Wednesday. Jaguars Today on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
Now more Jaguars Today on 1010XL, 92.5 FM.
Out in Denver, apparently things are starting to pick up the pace. We talked about Sean McDermott. Looks like he is the leading candidate to get the head coaching gig with the Buffalo Bills. Of course, the Jags' first domino to fall as they retain interim coach Doug Marrone. Mike Kliss out in Denver 9 News said he expects John Elway to make Vance Joseph an offer this morning for the vacant head coaching job. That's been rumored for a few weeks that he would be the top candidate.
He's supposed to interview in San Diego.
Since Kubiak announced he was stepping down.
He's a big Kubiak guy.
Just a couple weeks, a week and a half.
Right, worked with Kubiak. But, I mean, Miami's you talk about a resume, right? People upset about Wash. Can you imagine if this franchise hired a guy like Vance Joseph?
I hear you.
And, you know, there's a lot. That's what I guess people don't understand. I guess even we learn more about it as we go through these things now, twice in the last 5 years. And
three times
in the last six. And, you know, and so just talking on the – it's not always just the numbers. And Vance Joseph's a great example of that. I mean, people really think he's a great leader.
Leader of
great
men.
Great man,
yep.
Great – all this stuff that kind of checks boxes when you're looking for a coach, yet that Miami defense was really just okay. Now, he did get guys like Ndamukong Suh to really have a good year and finally play, and they hadn't been playing well the last couple of seasons. So, interesting one. I also find it fascinating. I really do like what the Broncos do. And how transparent they are at times with their coaching search. And that's not a knock against this organization. I have no problem with what they do. In fact, it's almost fun to try to figure it out, what the Jags are doing. Shad Khan keeps it so quiet, and I have no problem with that. But you remember the Broncos, remember when they interviewed Dirk Cutter a few years ago for their job? And they actually had video of, like, part of the interview with Elway?
Right.
I mean, they were on, like, that cutting edge of being transparent. Which makes me kind of wonder around here, was Monday and this week part of a different kind of change? This organization has been very transparent the last 4 years. I question whether that will now happen with Tom Coughlin, Doug Marrone, and now leading the charge with Dave Coughlin.
I would expect Tom Coughlin's not going to tell you anything he doesn't think you need to know.
Yeah.
Right? And I'm half wondering whether the first mini camp practice is a return to the white box outline where the media is allowed to stand at Jaguar practice, which will be on the complete opposite end of the three field practice facility. I really think that's a possibility.
It might be.
I think it is. At least a 5 or 10% chance. 641-1010. Let's go back to the phones. Glenn is up next out at the beaches. What's up, Glenn? How are you?
Hey, good morning, guys. I just wanted to chime in a little bit this morning on a couple of things. The first, the hire. I'm okay with Doug Marrone. I think the jury's still out. But what cinches it for me, I'm a season ticket holder since day one. And what clinches it for me, of course, is Tom Coughlin at the top. And not because, oh boy, let's go back to the good old days, but that we finally have in place in our organization a football guy through and through. And I think that he'll do whatever's necessary, not unlike what you just alluded to with John Elway. He'll get it fixed. He's a football guy. And then the second thing that I was thinking when you guys were talking about our defense and the defensive coordinators, I really look at this defense a little differently. I watched it this year when other teams needed to score, when other teams had to go down the field, our defense could not stop them. I'm very suspect of the stats of this defense. I agree that we're very young and we'll get better, but I'm telling you, when this defense had to make a stop this year, 8 out of 10 times they couldn't do it, or the other team knew just what to do to get down the field. Wondering what y'all thought about that.
Yeah, we kind of talked about that a little bit, that, you know, the hidden pitfalls, I guess, in the, if you just look at the number 6 ranking for the defense.
Yeah, I'm curious, and I'll have to do, obviously, some research on this, but I'm curious because they were 6th in yards, but 25th or whatever in points. What teams who have that kind of gap between those two numbers, what they generally do the next year after they have that kind of gap, and where does it usually fall? Like, is the yardage the one that's kind of a facade, or is it the points that winds up being a facade in those kind of situations? Because you could watch this Jaguars defense, and look, 2 years ago, the only defense that may have been worse in the league was the Giants. Maybe. Mm-hmm. And you could argue for both of them in 2015 which one was worse. And last year, you could just watch them and go, they're so much better than they were last year, but are they good enough yet? And I think we do talk about the young pieces and kind of stepping into it, but that gap between those two big numbers, I do wonder what happens the next year for teams who have that.
Well, I think it's a good thing that the fans aren't probably falling in the trap of what they did, and we all did, the year prior, even this organization appeared to do, and that is that offense was ready to take off. And even though they put up the numbers, there wasn't enough hesitation with that offense and that numbers and how they got the job done. And I kind of think the same thing about the defense. I think the defense is probably not as good as top 10, but they're actually somewhere in the middle. That points is a little misleading because of how many times did we see punt returns down to the six-yard line or points that are pick sixes.
Turnovers.
They had, I think this stat is correct. I think they had the worst starting field position for a defense in the NFL. So they were put in bad situations. And while we do always think of the last drive in the Indy game, you do have to remember there was a couple times that this defense made goal line stands to keep them in football games as well. While this, remember, they went through a stretch for five games, guys. They didn't have a lead for five complete games. They didn't have a lead. That's a tough thing for a defense to play in. So my point is I think it's somewhere in the middle. And, yes, it will get better. One, because they'll become a little more experienced. They're still playing young guys. They will add pieces to it, though. I think they should draft at the top of their draft more defense and try to make this as dominant as they can on that side of the ball because you are so uncertain about your QB situation right now.
All right. You could also make the argument they could go Fournette or Cook for the same exact reason, to take some pressure off
sure.
The passing
I just think you
game.
Should sign Le'Veon
They
Bell.
Were 30th in average field position, by the way.
I don't think – look. Put it, if he gets to free agency, I'm right there with you, okay? He ain't getting a free agency, man. They're not that dumb up in Pittsburgh. Let's get Short Dog in Gainesville next up. Good morning, Short Dog. How are you?
How you doing, Mike? Good morning. And
we're good.
Good morning to the rest of the guys. I love the show, man. Always listening. I agree with what you said earlier about the defense, Mike, that we don't have Cam Chancellor and we don't have Bennett and we don't have the free safety, Earl Thomas. So stop trying to make guys be those guys. But my question is, when Doug Marrone, first of all, overall, I'm happy Tom Coughlin is in the building. I was relieved when I heard he got the job. So Doug Marrone, it's a wait and see thing with Doug Marrone, and I'm gonna give him a chance to see what he's gonna do. Now my question is, what defense when Doug Marrone was in Buffalo, what defense did he run? The 2 years that he was in Buffalo.
That's a good question. Did they run 3-4 up there prior to Rex?
I don't think so. I don't believe so. But who was this guy? Was that Donnie Henderson?
I'd be lying if I told you it was. I'd be guessing.
I should know. I was just looking it up last night.
To me, while you looked that up, will we endeavor to find that, that's a Todd Wash kind of thing. I don't think Doug Marrone's going to be – I don't think you hire a defense coordinator, at least you shouldn't, and say, here's what you're going to run. I think you hire him and say, what do you want to run? Yeah. How are you going to best utilize the personnel that we have here? What would you do differently now that the restrictions are off you, so to speak, that you don't have to run Gus Bradley's defense per se? What do you want to do with this group? And then do it. Right? Doug Marrone comes from the offensive side. He's coached around.
He switched. They ran a 3-4 his first year with Mike Pettine as the defensive coordinator, 4-3 in 2014 when Jim Schwartz came in.
Schwartz was there. I don't get the sense that there's a big push to switch his team to a 3-4. I know that topic's been bandied about because I do think they have some versatile personnel that could go either way with that. And
I think Wash locks in the fact they'll stay 4-3.
Yeah, I look, they just need
they're
more
not
guys.
Gonna, listen,
they need
they're
guys that can win one-on-one pass rushing battles. That's what it comes down to for me. Because you can scheme all you want, and all the exotic blitzes are great. I want a guy that when he's double-teamed can occasionally beat the double-team. And when he's singled up, you're expecting him to get to the quarterback because he's going to get there more often than not.
You need more Malik Jacksons.
I need more Malik
Jacksons. Malik Jackson did that.
Give me a Jason Pierre-Paul or someone of his ilk. You know, maybe Ngakoue and Fowler will be those guys, but they need someone to be those guys on this team. They need much more consistent pressure. And I'm, again, even though you need those individual one-on-ones, I'm not opposed to scheming it up to help them send some more blitzes. Just be more aggressive in general. Defensive players, you're not going to hear too many defensive players complaining about a scheme that is constantly having them moving forward.
No, that's what they listen, they signed Deshaun Gibson for a long time. So, I mean, they need to try to find a way to keep him active and get him involved. They tried a little bit at times blitzing him. But I still think you'll see some of that single high safety. Will you see more guys, will you see a fluctuation of that? Possibly. But a lot of teams do it in the league. A lot of teams are successful with it in the league. But Gibson, I think, is one of those guys that really didn't like the situation because he wasn't actively involved enough. I think they'll try to please him a little bit more in that regard. Just one of the tweaks maybe Wash will make.
All right, with Brent Martineau, with Fat Tony, I'm Mike Dempsey. It's Jaguars today on a Metro Rooter Wednesday. If you're on the line, stay right there. We'll get to you coming up at 641-1010. Also, this date in football, the drive around the NFL, and more to come. Jaguars today about an hour deep here live at Everbank on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
And now, this date in football history.
All right, here are a few odds and ends from this date in football history. January 11th through the years, 1946, Burt Bell was named the second NFL commissioner, and in doing so, he decided to move the Chicago headquarters of the league to Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. Now you know what happened back in 1946.
Site of the draft this year.
That's right. It is the site of the draft this year. You going to the draft?
Of course. I was kind of hoping. You know, I've been saying I probably won't go if they pick outside the top 10. Damn it, Jags.
Yes. You're not looking forward to hanging out with the denizens of Philadelphia?
It is actually pretty good. A couple days is good. It's good at the draft. But I still didn't want the Jags picking in the top
right.
5.
1970 on January 11th.
A little more fun last year when you could go talk to Derrick Henry.
Yes. 1970, Super Bowl IV, Kansas City beat Minnesota on this date, 23-7 in New Orleans. Super Bowl MVP Len Dawson of the Chiefs. Famous birthdays for this date. Who was the best receiver on the first 49ers Super Bowl team? Wasn't Jerry Rice.
Taylor?
It was not. It was Freddie Solomon. At least I think he was the best of the bunch back then. Taylor might have been on that squad. I think Freddie Solomon was probably the most productive back in 81. He had nearly 1,000 yards rushing. He was born on this date in 1953. He actually passed away in 2012 at the age of 59. Born on this date in 1967, Richmond Webb, 7-time Pro Bowl offensive tackle for the Miami Dolphins. He is 50, and we mentioned him already today. Happy birthday, Malik Jackson. Counting his money today, perhaps. I don't know. That's
he doesn't
what
mind
I would
counting
do.
That money, does he?
If I were him, man, I'd spend every day counting that money. Really, 90? 90 million? Wow, or at least the potential money.
Potential.
6.5 sacks was a career high for Malik Jackson. I think overall a successful first year here in a Jaguar uniform. Happy 27th birthday to Malik Jackson. That is this date in football history.
Underrated storyline.
Now, the drive around the NFL on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
Green Bay Packers wide receiver Geronimo Allison has a court date set on
Geronimo!
January 23rd, stemming from a September incident where he was pulled over for going 11 miles an hour over the posted speed limit. He's already paid the fine for that speeding ticket. Police reportedly smelled marijuana coming from the car, found cigars that tested positive for marijuana in the rental car as well. The marijuana charge wasn't added until December 15th, and that is the reason for the January 23rd court date that Allison has coming up. He will have a big role with the Packers moving forward through the playoffs after the injury to Jordy Nelson during their wild card win over the Giants last week. The Packers have released a statement essentially saying they are aware of the situation and are monitoring it going forward. Vic Carucci is reporting that the Buffalo Bills are zeroed in on Carolina defensive coordinator Sean McDermott for their vacant head coaching position, and added that the deal could get done in the next day or two. We'll see. He's only the third name that attached to this Buffalo job. There are also rumors that if McDermott does get the job, that Mike McCoy is expected to join him in Buffalo as offensive coordinator. Mike Silver, earlier today on Twitter, tweeted out that Mike McCoy, speaking of him, will weigh several options as OC. Could include the Broncos if Vance Joseph gets that job, Bills if Sean McDermott is hired, the Jags, and others. So we'll keep an eye on what's going on with Mike McCoy. Vance Joseph expected to interview in San Diego today after completing his interview with Denver yesterday. A report from Mike List this morning that the Broncos are expected to make a job offer to Joseph sometime today. Jim Trotter tweeted out yesterday, quote, "The league views San Diego as salvageable. Oakland is not," end quote. There's a league meeting today where discussions are expected to continue that would, quote, clear a path for the Raiders' potential move to Las Vegas out of the Oakland area, but apparently a Hail Mary potentially being put together to keep San Diego in San Diego for a couple more years.
Oh, yeah, and that which would allow them to continue to leverage teams using Los Angeles as a destination, because I don't think you're going to leverage the city of San Diego. You know, if they can't keep the Chargers, I don't see them getting another team anytime soon. I do think the Raiders are going to end up in Las Vegas, and again, I don't think Oakland's one of the least attractive cities I would like to visit based on. I mean, we were there for the Super Bowl. At least we were in that area. I went to a game with Tyler. We went to go see the Warriors play the Thunder.
That's right.
Out in Oakland. And Oakland, I just remember they used to pop up quite a lot when Deadspin used to do their Tuesday night fight segment, where you have, you know, a little homemade video of the various fights at the fast food joints.
And I think it's already seeping into the fan base. If you go look at attendance numbers, because we were looking at these a couple weeks ago, and the Oakland Raiders, despite the fact that they're 12-4, having the best season they've had basically in over a decade in Oakland, at home, still were only at about 86% capacity. So the fans are like, we all know you're leaving. You know, we're not going to show up to support a team that we know is not going to be here next year when it really, really gets good here for the Oakland Raiders. So the Vegas Raiders look like they have a bright future.
Yeah, we went kind of back to Mojo's hometown a couple years back. And did a story, and you know, I didn't think Oakland was. I thought it kind of got a little bad rep. Now we weren't there for a long time, but I mean, it wasn't as miserable as everybody makes it out to be at times. But it is kind of, you know, it's San Francisco or Oakland, and you know what side of the bridge you're going on.
Sure,
you're going to the San Francisco side. I was thinking of this morning, Jack Del Rio, and Vegas. He's probably like, let's go.
Probably a lot of guys on that team are actually. You know, talking to Maurice Jones-Drew, he thought that the Rams got caught up in the whole L.A. nightlife thing this year. He said it was a problem that, you know, the young guys, a lot of young roster adjusting from St. Louis, Missouri to Los Angeles and, you know, one of those cities that never sleep type places. And he said that was an issue for them.
A little distraction.
Covenant. It should ultimately, you'd think, could be a home field advantage for teams flying into Vegas.
Yeah.
You know, we talk about, you know, you go out west now, the in vogue thing is to go on Friday. Like some Sunday morning flights maybe in order for Vegas. Yeah. As far as
we'll do our walkthrough here on Saturday.
Look at this guy right here, fan cam, rolling in here with breakfast for thousands.
How
hopefully.
About this?
How about it? And by breakfast, I mean ribs.
No chili today.
No ribs. It's all ribs.
You'll have to when training camp starts this August, you'll have to bring out the 1995 edition of that chili.
That's right. That's right.
throwback.
Let's go back to the phones here. Well, we got a couple of minutes at 641-1010. Jeff in Orange Park, you're next up on Jaguars Today. Good morning, man.
Yes, I'm very happy with the Tom Coughlin hire. Tom Coughlin understands you only got to beat three teams to get to the playoffs. That's your division. Three teams, six games. Also, Doug Marrone. Very good hire. Not sexy. Everybody wants to talk about how the players feel about him. Nobody in New England is talking about their feelings now, or Pittsburgh, or Green Bay, about the coach. Winning cheers all. Thank you and have a great day.
All right, thank you. Doesn't mean, you know, he's got to win, though, right? So you do get, as a coach, you got a little more leeway when you're an easy guy to get along with, right? I mean, that's the fact. If you're a hard ass, you better win, right? Because if you're one of these guys that seem to be difficult to get along with, or in general, just make everybody miserable to be around. And I was reading a quote from Justin Tuck, said something like to the effect, "We hated Coughlin, but you better not say a bad word about him around me because that guy is phenomenal. We hated him, but we love him.
You love him,
you know." And I hope that's the case. It's an oversimplification what he said talking about beating your division, but I understand the root of that. Tom Coughlin, when he came in and said, we got to build a team to beat the Pittsburgh Steelers in the AFC Central. And unless we do that, and we can consistently do that, then we're just kind of pretenders, you know, and they did that in short order. So, yeah, beat a team, build a team that can compete in the worst division in football. Shouldn't be that hard a damn job, right?
No. And then it became, you know, when Del Rio got here, was about building a team that could beat the Colts. I mean, that's what it was. Now, I don't know. The division is such a quagmire right now that I don't know there's a team that you have to design yourself to beat. But certainly the defense looks like it's going to be good in Houston for a while. With J.J. Watt coming back, Mariota looked like he took a big next step, and you got to deal with luck every year in the division as well. We'll see. A couple of these young teams, we'll see how much they develop here over the course of the next year or two.
Well, I would say the playoff formula is simple. You have to take care of business more often than not at home and more often than not in your division. And if you do that, you're probably headed to the playoffs and winning that division. And the Jags have not been able to do that, whether it's about designing a team to beat one team or not. They haven't been able to do that. Then they can talk about the next step in designing a team to beat the New England Patriots, which everybody is trying to do and has been trying to do for the last 15 years.
Yeah, Houston's in the playoffs because they went 5-1 in the division.
Simple as that.
That's why they're playing right now.
And at one time they were 5-0 at home. I don't know what their record finished up at home.
7-1.
7-1.
Yeah,
the Falcons
that went 5-3 at home, which was the worst record. They're the only team that failed to go 6-2 or better at home that won a division this year. It's just interesting because I wanted to look up to see how accurate that Jerry's statement was. You had Seattle actually had the second best division record to Arizona, but they won the division because they're just better overall, and they were 7-1 at home. But they were about a game worse in the division. And the Giants actually had the best record in the division. In the NFC East, they also made the playoffs, but the Cowboys just went 3-3 in the division. They beat everybody else outside the division, though. That's a pretty good formula, too.
Yeah, they had a Week 17 game that didn't matter.
Right, that's true. But if you're going to sweep the other 10 games,
sure.
you can slip up in the division.
Were the Patriots, were they undefeated on the road?
They were 7-1 in the division, 8-0 on the road.
See, and that's the one thing about Coughlin.
5-1, excuse me, in the division.
I think Ryan O'Halloran brought this up today in the paper, or maybe it was yesterday, but if Coughlin, when he did win those Super Bowls, they won on the road, which was interesting. You know, they really had good road records, especially throughout the playoffs when they had to go get the W's.
Had to go through Lambeau twice.
Yeah. Listen, it's about getting there. The one thing, if you look back on the tenure of Tom Coughlin in New York, I think he won double-digit games in the regular season 4 out of the 12 years. So, you think about the Super Bowls, and even though Super Bowl one of the year was 9-7, right? And he was on the hot seat, and it's just about getting right at the right time.
Getting right. It's not just because I hear people say, just get in the tournament. That's not good enough.
No.
There are teams like the Bengals that get in, and they don't have elements of their team that can get transcendently hot and carry them a four-week period.
The Lions this year.
You need that. I think if Stafford wasn't hurt, it might have been a different story with them down the stretch, But you look
back. They came in limping.
Go back to Arizona when they made the postseason and made it to the Super Bowl and almost beat
with
Pittsburgh,
Kurt Warner,
right?
Yeah.
They had a passing game that could get as red hot and carry that team for a 3 or 4 week period of time, and it did. Eli Manning got that way for the New York Giants. Could Blake do that? Perhaps. But you're going to need some element of your team, whether it's a great defense like the Baltimore Ravens have used that formula, something that can be the league's best for a period of time.
For a month.
And then have it happen at the right month, right? While that could happen, the Giants also, as we pointed out, lost seven games that year, so they could have also lost their eighth at some point just as easily, right?
That's why the Packers are a hot pick. Honestly, it is because Aaron Rodgers is so good right now.
Yeah. Right. Nobody's even – I don't even think people are looking at Jordy Nelson being out and thinking it's going to impact him much at all.
No.
The way Rodgers
is
playing.
He's playing.
Right. He is just – that guy's unreal is what he is. All right, we got to take a timeout. I can smell the ribs from here. Fan cams in the house. Brent Martineau's here. Fat Tony is along. I'm Mike Dempsey. And Wednesday's brought to you by Metro Rooter. It's Jaguars Today. We're live at Everbank on 1010XL, 92.5 FM.
All right, everybody up. Come on.
Hands in.
Yeah.
Come on, everybody. Let's go out and kick some butt.
Here we go. On three.
92.5 FM. From the Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute studios at Everbank Field, more Jaguars Today on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
Dempsey's making his way back around to the table. FanCam brought in some ribs, and Dempsey is enjoying them.
Yeah, a little something on your chin.
I might. Delicious. Delicious.
They look good.
We're spoiled.
I had a big breakfast, so I'm waiting on the ribs for lunch.
He's like, I figured I wanted to do something so nice for you guys because you do such a great job for the Jaguar fans. It is our job. That's what we do, right? I mean, we're done at noon. We have it easy.
I've had a lot of Jags fans who said I haven't done a good job for the Jags
fans. I should be cooking ribs for the Jags fans what I should be
doing.
He's
such a nice guy, too. He walks in. Fan Cam and I went head-to-head in one of the listener leagues in the championship the fantasy games, and he's like, man, 13-1, that was really good. Like, there was no sarcasm in it at all. He was seriously just complimenting me for how good my team was this year. And he's the guy who beat me in the championship.
Yes, he did. I was so happy that he did, too, Brent.
That was the coolest backslap ever.
Yeah,
that he just landed on you.
Right, the humble brag. Because I've only pointed out at least once a week, more often.
He was the only one that beat
times.
Me before.
I was the one who put the one on him during the regular season. But Tony had a dominant team. He really did. And
you can't close the deal.
It happened. Hey, I had one like that this year, 15-0, seriously. Lost by a point and a half.
How'd you do in your other 32 weeks?
I won about $5,000 this year, so that was pretty good.
Did you really?
Yeah, so about $5,000 net profit this year.
Net. That's a nice little side gig.
That's not bad. I'll take it. You know, it's not, I don't play a lot of big money fantasy football, so for me to win $5,000, that was
it's a shame. It's only 4 months.
It's a good season. You know, honestly, I'm okay with it.
I'm okay with a little downtime. When that ends, you're probably like, man, I got a lot of time.
It's like, what TV series am I going to binge watch, right? What books am I going to read? All these different things I can do
now.
You
going to play any cash NASCAR? Because you do really well with the NASCAR,
I really do well in NASCAR. I played some cash NASCAR. It's a different game when you play it on DraftKings. It's not quite the same as what you're used to. I like the Yahoo format. Yahoo's a lot of fun. It's funny. Got a few guys on Twitter that played NASCAR fantasy with me, and they're joking around. How come you guys aren't breaking down this Carl Edwards news?
I was going to say, don't pick Carl Edwards.
No, he was. Do you want to talk about a dominant year? Carl Edwards was ridiculous this year.
Interesting how the guys in the NASCAR are leaving. So many of them.
I know. Well, I mean, I presume Carl Edwards has made a lot of money.
Pretty good life they've made in a 15-year career.
Absolutely, right? And I heard the guys talking about this morning. I guess he flies his private plane. He's a pilot, licensed pilot. He's based in Missouri, so he's always, you know, you're traveling. Those guys race a lot of weeks, 40 weeks out of the year or something
season.
Like that? It's 40. Is it – how many races they have? Something 36, something like
that? I think
it's 36.
Sounds right. Correct.
Yeah. That's a lot of racing for those guys because it's mostly a large portion of the week you're out there practicing, testing, all that stuff.
Yeah, busy lifestyle.
We went NASCAR on Jaguars. We didn't say one damn word about the national championship game either on Monday or Tuesday. And here we are.
There we got NASCAR.
Talking about Carl Edwards.
You brought up fantasy, and there you go.
Unbelievable. 641-1010 if you want to get on board and talk about the question of the day, which is how do you feel about Todd Wash being retained as defensive coordinator of the Jacksonville Jaguars? There's a big presumption that Nate Hackett will be retained as the offensive coordinator, Brent, because he was with Doug Marrone in Buffalo. He has had what has been described as a really good working relationship with Blake Bortles, yet we haven't heard an announcement on that.
Yeah.
Does that give you pause?
Well, it does give me pause. When there's silence like that, I'm always a little leery. And just even take you back to Monday, you know, when very few people would confirm the Marrone news, it meant something else was in the works. You know what I mean? And it was. Tom Coughlin was in the works.
Right.
And so I think I thought of that last night as I was doing it on the TV side. I'm like, I'd be a little careful here because I think we all think it's such a slam dunk. And I still believe it's going to happen. I really do. But I think there's a side of me that says, I wonder if some other avenue, especially with some of the guys out there, McCoy is one example, that will there be a fingerprint of maybe Tom Coughlin, you know, in discussions with Marrone. I think if it's Marrone, he has a relationship with Hackett, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
Had a relationship with Hackett's dad, if you go all the way back, I think, to Georgia Tech. And so I do believe that's probably the front runner, but I think they might be at least just double-checking other things and other options. It makes sense, at least for this year, that it's Hackett because of the continuity with Blake Bortles. But then you also have to say, what is the long-term vision of the QB situation here, and could an offensive coordinator like a Mike McCoy, if you feel he's a better fit, trump that?
What do you think the long-term vision is? I don't know if there is a long-term vision.
I don't know if there can be.
Right, that's what I mean. Like, the long-term hope is that Blake Bortles swings the pendulum back the other way next year and shows that he can be a franchise quarterback. You can't count on that, though. But I think the fascinating thing to me about that position this offseason is what level of investment do they make in bringing in competition, right? Chad Henne's under contract for another year. Is it going to be just a Henne and Brandon Allen and say, hey, whoever plays best can play quarterback for this team, or are you going to bring in some guys you think have a reasonable expectation of really pushing Blake? Because I don't think Henne is going to push Blake.
No, but I do think the one thing that when I – talk about Chad Henne, and I could see them freeing up a few bucks there and maybe making, if Brendan Allen they like, or if they drafted a guy to push or even sign a different free agent, which I don't really think that's as much an option. If you're going to drive it, you're going to have a different veteran in here. I don't see the big gap difference between Henne and that veteran, the ones that would be available.
Or the type who may be an upgrade, you're going to have to invest so much in him that almost that's your, you do that if you're bringing in the guy who's your presumptive starter.
Yeah, that's right. And I'm not sure that guy even exists either, unless you're trading for Tony Romo, which we don't really feel like that will happen, but you can't rule anything out. Jay Cutler doesn't seem like he's a fit almost anywhere. So I get my point is, if you're trying to ease this transition to help Blake Bortles be as successful as he possibly can in a deciding year in 2017, there's a comfort zone for him with Henne in the room. We know that. There's a comfort zone for him and Hackett as well. So do you put him in the best situation possible rather than constant change? And I guess that's what you wrestle with right now. And it all depends on how a guy like Tom Coughlin, I think, does view that position. You know, we've heard rumblings that Coughlin is not a huge Bortles guy. We know Caldwell is. We think Marone is. We think Hackett is, but where does he sit on that? How will he answer that question tomorrow? And go back a couple weeks to the news conference that Dave Caldwell had, and he said, listen, nobody is untouchable here in this organization. Not me, not any player. This is a start over next year from that standpoint.
Right, but I mean, that's just it. You know, some of that may be Dave Caldwell being expedient and realizing that you cannot take a different position, right? I mean, yeah. If you want that two-year contract extension that's coming his way, you can't sit there and say that Blake Bortles is our quarterback after the way he played this past year. I think Dave's smart enough to realize that he doesn't even need to say it. Blake is the overwhelming likely opening day starter for this football team. Don't you think? I mean, I don't get the sense that I don't feel now. Long way to go in this process, but I don't get any sense that there is any inclination to take a quarterback with the fourth overall pick.
What would surprise you more, that or trading for Tony Romo?
Trading for Tony Romo would probably surprise me more, because I think to trade for Tony Romo, you're going to have to get Tony Romo to buy into coming here. I don't think Dallas is going to – I think Dallas is going to try to give him as soft a landing as possible, preferably out of the conference, which would check the box here. But I think John Elway will be first in line. And if I'm Tony Romo, I'm hitching my wagon to John Elway, who's a proven championship team builder.
And a proven defense.
Right, proven defense, right. A lot of things working. Defense. You think you can run the ball if C.J. Anderson comes back healthy. You have, well, we like the young wide receivers here. Hard to fault choosing Demaryius Thomas and Emmanuel Sanders at the top of your depth chart. So I think there's practically no chance that Tony Romo ends up in a Jacksonville Jaguars.
Yeah, I've just thrown it out there.
I don't think there's much chance that they draft one at four,
no.
But I think it's a little bit more likely.
Can we trade for Romo, draft Deshaun Watson in the fourth round, Romo breaks his back, and
in
he becomes Dak?
Yes. Yes, can we?
Can we get that?
I'd pay $20 million if I could guarantee that scenario right now. I would.
They would too.
They should anyway. They should be willing to pay that.
As long as Ivory runs like Ezekiel Elliott.
That is a factor though, right? What are you willing to pay a guy to come in and compete? Hey, we want to bring in competition. Okay, who's out there? Mike Glennon. What does Mike Glennon want? Mike Glennon probably wants a chance. Now, I don't know how many teams are going to be beating down Mike Glennon's door. I use him as an example. Yeah. You could see, okay, this guy started some games, had a modicum of success. Maybe he could push Blake given the opportunity. Well, what would it cost to find out then? You get into it. And if you're going to do that, are you moving on from Henne and taking that $5 million and applying it to Mike Glennon? And then how much above that are you going to be willing to go? You know, and is Mike Glennon have a better alternative out there where he could go somewhere, say Buffalo, for instance, where they're look and where he could – walk in as the top guy on the depth chart.
San Francisco, potentially.
Right, perhaps, something like that. So
Geno
there could be
Smith,
better opportunities
Matt
out
Barkley.
There.
I mean, these are the Matt type Barkley of names we're talking about.
He had his moments. He doesn't.
Case Keenum.
I think all the names you throw out there.
Matt McGloin.
No.
All those names, people will say, okay, do you want that name or do you want Blake Bortles in 2017? I think people are going to pick Bortles.
I'd take Tyrod. I'd give Tyrod Taylor, if you're given a fair chance, I think he might be able to beat out Blake Bortles. Now, I'm not saying I would try to choose Taylor at Bortles' expense and cut him. Bortles is going to be here regardless.
Yeah, yeah.
Tyrod Taylor, I don't think, is going to be looking for a $5 million Chad Henne, come on in and see if he can beat out Blake Bortles kind of deal, is my guess. I don't know if he may, you know, the market will dictate what he gets, but maybe he goes somewhere and signs a one-year deal and, you know, tries to start for San Fran or somebody like you just talked about.
Here's what doesn't make sense with the timetable that we say, with the 3 years, with these guys all in, they think they have a team that can win immediately, or at least head in that direction immediately. What doesn't make a lot of sense is the drafting of a franchise quarterback, even if you liked one, and then say, okay, we're going to ride with a rookie and watch him develop, but it might take two or three. You know what I mean? I think they have to go with somebody who's experienced and played and might be a little bit broken, like Bortles and like some of these backup QBs that we've talked about and the journeymen, and just hope for the best. And right now, again, when you say hope for the best, I think Bortles still fits that slipper because, you know, as the much as you want to knock Blake, and there's plenty to knock, I don't think it's easy to throw 60 touchdowns in two seasons. The guy's done that.
Right.
That's as much as it's you don't want the guy to turn it over 50 times in 3 years. It's look at the names we're talking about. They don't just go out and throw 60 touchdowns in 2 years. You're not awful and bad and terrible and can never play in the NFL if you do that. And so I think you got to take a little bit of the good and bad with it.
All right, let's go back to the phones. Reggie on the South Side next up this morning on Jaguars Today. Good morning, Reggie.
Hey, good morning, guys. How y'all doing, man?
Doing well. What's up?
Hey, that's good, man. Hey, my question is this right here. How are we going to do the draft? Now, the defense and offense, both they got a little banged up this year. But the thing is this right here. What are we going to mainly focus on? Are we going to focus on the defense? Are we going to mainly focus on the offense? Since the offense has been a problem this year, but the defense has been somewhat kind of a good vanilla. And I'm going to take it out there.
All right. A good vanilla? Is that what you described, Matt? First of all, to sit there and say, we got to draft all of one thing, I think you hear it from time to time, hey, man, we really got to get some defense in this draft.
Enough of that.
But get great players regardless. You could use them on both sides of the football. So much of this is going to be colored by what happens in free agency. Do they get Jason Pierre-Paul or a guy like that in free agency? Do they get Ron O'Leary, who Tony likes from the Dallas Cowboys, and solidify their offensive line? Or, you know, what? So what holes are filled will play a role in dictating which way they go. Again, I don't think it's a quarterback at number four. I don't think it's the greatest likelihood that they go running back at number four. I don't think it's completely out of the picture because I think the top two guys are special talents this year. Could be a Jonathan Allen. You know, beyond that, a little bit guessing, you know, as the consensus of the scouting community starts to coalesce around who the top players really are, and they actually start to hear what GMs and scouts actually think about some of these guys. We'll get a clearer picture. You know, you look, is Cam Robinson worthy of being the fourth overall pick?
Jamal Adams is showing up on a lot of
He is safety out of LSU. He shows up to the Jags quite a bit in mock drafts right now. So there are a number of ways they could go. I would think if I'm betting right now, I'm going to bet they take a defensive player with the fourth overall pick. If I'm betting, I'm not saying it's the right decision. And then after that, you know, I could see him drafting an O-line. I could see him drafting running back. I could see him drafting a quarterback at some point. But that doesn't mean
could they draft another corner to go along
corner,
with Jalen?
Get a pass rusher. So to say,
who knows,
is it going
to
be an offense
Prince,
or defense draft? You know, let's see what happens in free agency.
I do believe, Mike, that they go defense sitting here right now
with the fourth pick or just general.
Fourth pick especially, okay. But even I think they will try to. Yeah, because when you get to the second and third, then you might bring the quarterback back into play, especially like in the third round. But also offensive line needs some. You've hit on that in the past.
Would you
in the
take
third round.
Deshaun Watson right now if you knew you could get him in the second round?
I think I would certainly consider
it. Minute.
Yeah.
If in the second round, if you watch that guy do
it's
what
tough
he
to
did
pass up
to Alabama, and I mean, I'm not trying to argue both sides of this, but Dan Hickett brought up yesterday, hey, Johnny Manziel is kind of the last guy who did this to Alabama in back-to-back years too.
Yeah, true.
So that does give you a little bit of pause, but he doesn't have the character issues, it seems like, that Manziel's were well-documented. I would take a chance on Deshaun Watson in the second round. I just don't see – I don't even know – nobody knows where he's going to go right
now.
Yeah,
it's a tough fit. But, you know, with the quarterbacks, the way they climb, I think he'll probably
He could
climb.
Easily be a top two pick.
Coming off that performance, his
Absolutely.
Leadership, he'll blow people away in interviews. You know that.
Absolutely.
All the boxes will check other than the measurement one, and that will scare some people away, and I think it could even scare this organization away if he does slip. But I just think defense, back to what I said at the top of the show or near the top of the show, I say defense because of all the talk about the QB position. You try to get this defense. You think it's you've got some really talented players on that side of the ball right now. Well, get as many more as you can and continue to build that. And I'll take you back to the Coughlin days. We do this a bunch, don't we? When they won the Super Bowl, I was in Albany, New York, covering training camp, and we were like, why are they picking more defensive linemen? Mm-hmm. Why are they picking OCU Manure? Why are they taking Justin Tuck? Why are they bringing these guys in when they have Michael Strahan and this guy and this guy? Well, that's what won them those Super Bowls, because they had this endless pursuit of pass rushers, and they were ahead of the curve in that at that time of getting that. And now Denver does it, and everybody seems to do this wave of defensive linemen. I would be stunned if a guy like Jonathan Allen is there on the board and he's not here in Jacksonville.
All right. Let's take a time out here. We'll come back and get to the fan feedback spotlight asking today specifically your opinion on the retention of Todd Wash as Jaguars defensive coordinator. You can hit us up on Twitter at BrentAS360, at 1010XL Fat Tony, and at MD_1010XL. Also check in on the Jaguars Today Facebook page as well. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony, and Brent Martineau here with you live at EverBank. Jaguars Today on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
This is the quarterback here, Jacksonville Jaguars, Blake Bortles, and you are listening to Jaguars Today on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
All right, final few minutes of the program here. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony, Brent Martineau here with you. Tony asking if SNL returns live this week, Saturday Night Live. I believe they do.
Oh, yeah.
Target-rich environment this week.
Oh, yeah.
Let's just say.
With a news conference to come today.
Yes. We race towards the inauguration. coming up in less than 2 weeks.
That's pretty good. You could spit that out.
It's not my own. But
it's going to reach his ears. He knows. He's making a list of everyone who's making jokes.
Oh. Are you kidding me?
Or he's having someone make a list.
There's an enemies list. There's definitely an enemies list. Today we asked you on a Metro Rooter Wednesday what your reaction was to Todd Wash being retained as the defensive coordinator of the Jacksonville Jaguars. Tony, what do the Twitter peeps have to say?
Here's what we got from Mike. He said, don't care, just win games. We're long overdue. From Jason, party is over, no more fluff. Winning is everything. Getting better means nothing without W's. Hashtag 5 minutes early. From Jarrell, little confused. Players have voiced issues with Wash's scheme. Hashtag cage stays closed. From Irish Jaguar, the scheme has to change. If it does, I'll wait and see. If not, I'm not happy. From Chris, trying to hold judgment until I know more, different scheme or not, etc. Ask me in May. From Alvaro, defense has not been an issue. Blake is an issue. What are they doing about that? From Jag fan, I like it. Jags had a top 10 defense, shocked by all the staff firings.
All right, here's a couple on the Facebook page where they can go a little bit more in depth because they're not limited to 140 characters. Dalton said, I'm not mad. His work last year, talking about Wash, demanded that he be retained. With that said, he's a lot more work than fans think. With his status being retained, he now has a whole new staff, needs to address the players who called him out. I trust Coughlin, the godfather, to figure something out with how to maximize this defense's production. I don't know, but like Tom Coughlin, I don't think is going to be involved in the level of, hey, Todd, on 3rd and 7. I don't think that's Tom's role. You know what I mean? He may be the head of football operations. I don't think you want him micromanaging every level of the defensive scheming and play calling and the offense. You know what I mean? I mean, I would imagine he's going to be talking with Doug Marrone on a multi-time on a weekly basis, you know, and talk about general philosophical things and things like that. But in the end, you got to let Marrone coach a team, right? And you got to let him run his coaching staff. And that was one thing I think that Jeff Logman brought up. Said, Tom Coughlin has to be able to take a step back and say, okay, you're the guy, you're the coach for a reason. I'm in this role for a reason. And while I have a lot of say on a lot of things, you know, come game day, you don't want Jerry Jones calling down to Jason Garrett on the sideline, even though he has the ability to do that.
Yeah.
That's not the way you don't want it. That heavy hand.
And isn't nearly as qualified to do it as Tom Coughlin would be.
Granted. I'm just saying.
The most fascinating part of this whole deal is how they coexist. And again, we won't see behind the curtain on how that happens. But, you know, if it doesn't go well, we'll hear eventually.
Yeah.
But if it goes well, it could be very smooth and very insightful and very important to have a guy with Tom Coughlin's knowledge. And, you know, you got to go back. Look at from the Parcells days all the way to these Super Bowl runs with the Giants. He's seen things over generations, you know, at how this works. I mean, and what it takes. And that is invaluable. I mean, and I think that's what Shad Khan probably fell in love with, some of that knowledge from now going back 40 years in the NFL to what it takes and some of those consistent traits of what it takes, even though the game changes over time. And it'll be really fun to watch and see. You know, I keep comparing it to Bill Parcells in Miami. That happened in 2007. And there's good and bad with it. You know, I don't know what it was like with Parcells in the building. Now, he hired Jeff Ireland. He hired Sparano, so he hired those guys. This one's a little different. Did Coughlin hire Marone? We're not sure yet. Maybe we find out tomorrow. Caldwell was already here. So it's not completely the same. But there was an immediate spike when Parcells got in the building, too. They won like 11 games right away.
They also got a quarterback. They got Chad Pennington. They went from 1 to 11 wins. And not that Pennington was a Pro Bowler, no. An All-Pro. He was a competent, proven quarterback who wasn't going to lose you many games.
That's right.
And
well,
the Jags also,
because
don't
personnel-wise, have that he also passed over a guy like Matt Ryan.
True.
And
which he said was his biggest mistake, yeah. Taking Jake Long over Matt Ryan.
And what happened there, because like you said, Pennington came. But since that one time when they won 11 games with Sparano, they hadn't made the postseason since.
Right.
So it wasn't a long-term fix. It was an immediate change.
And he's
had
always,
immediate results.
Parcells is always good about that. Anywhere he went by the second year they were in the playoffs. Anywhere he went. And, you know, could you sustain it? Well, maybe not. But right now, let's worry about that, sustaining it. Once,
oh, yeah.
You know,
get there.
Let's get there.
There's a get there factor here before sustaining it.
Right. A couple others here on Facebook. Justin, in response to Todd Wash being retained, it's the Jags being the Jags. In other words, he's not too enthusiastic about it. Then you got this one. CJ says, stats don't lie. Clearly a top 10 defense all year. I like the move. Sometimes stats do lie. I'm not saying in this particular instance, but when you say stats don't lie, they are what they are, but what do they really represent sometimes, and what are the conditions that go into procuring them? Josh said, rolls eyes. We should have drained the swamp, speaking of SNL. You know, mixed bag. And in the end, that's fine. You know, you could feel any way you like about it, and I totally get it. We talked about this at length yesterday. If you didn't want to see any coaches retained on this staff, that was not, I don't think that's an unreasonable position to take because they've had so little success. I don't think, though, just because a guy was on a coaching staff of a head coach who wasn't successful doesn't mean he can't coach necessarily, or it doesn't mean things are going to be done the same way. You have the stink of the Gus Bradley era. Well, you have the record. You carry that with you, but you have a chance. You don't have to do the same methodology. You can do it your own way, and if you start to win, you're going to, that stink will stay attached to Gus Bradley, and it won't so much reflect on you. You're going to be judged now if you're Doug Marone on what you do going forward.
Every coach in the NFL has a certain stink to them when it comes to losing.
Yes.
They've all lost.
Yeah.
I mean, even the great ones.
Yeah.
Even Coughlin, you know, even Parcells, those guys, they've all lost at times. So you're always going to have that. And that never makes everybody completely happy. I do wonder this, and I asked this question on our show yesterday. Is Marone the guy if Coughlin's not here? And that's one of my curiosities. I wonder, is this a fit? Or was
like
he always the guy?
Like a combination fit?
Yeah. Did the pieces go together? Because, listen, quite frankly, if Josh McDaniels was your top choice, but you also want to have Tom Coughlin in the building, that wasn't going to work. From what
because
we can
McDaniels
gather.
Wants
McDaniels
a lot of control
wants a lot of that control.
The
I don't think he wanted to be putting this. Heck, you can, I think, make the argument, was Mike Smith maybe the number one guy on the list? And Mike Smith said, I don't want that situation. Could it have happened? I'm not
right.
saying it
well,
did.
It's a rare situation in the league to have a GM and an executive vice president who has personnel control. And the interesting thing will be to ask, you know, I'm quite sure that Dave Caldwell's contract that ran through this year called for him to have final say.
Yes.
Did they rewrite the contract?
The 53.
Did they rewrite that, or is it, I mean, how, when push comes to shove and the fourth pick is on the clock, if Coughlin wants one guy and Caldwell wants the other guy, are we getting Coughlin's guy? that, I mean, that's the bottom line,
yeah.
right? When you talk about final say, that's what it boils down to. When you disagree, it's one thing to have a collaborative effort and we can all agree and we all have a shared vision. But when you disagree on a guy and vehemently disagree who's going to win that battle, we suspect it's going to be Coughlin. Time will tell.
And that comes, see, I think that comes down to the vision of it, Mike. You know, this has been Dave Caldwell's vision, this organization, this build, this slow build. And I think now this becomes Tom Coughlin's vision from that perspective. Now, does it isolate to a certain individual? Maybe not. But I could see Tom Coughlin saying, we need to target pass rushers in free agency. And maybe Caldwell says, we need to target offensive linemen in free agency. Well, if that's the case, I think Tom Coughlin's going to win out. They're going to target pass rushers in free agency. You know what I mean?
Right. I would suspect you're right on that score. Speaking of your show, Frangie and Friends,
yes.
Frangie and Company, whatever you guys call it these days. let's see. You, Hayes Carline now,
yeah.
part of the program. Lauren Brooks ties it all together. Frank Frangie.
It's fantastic.
Great. Fantastic. You're contractually obligated to say that.
Yes.
You know, I know you miss the days of the three of us together.
I do.
Which was the greatest radio the station has ever produced for an extended period of time.
Yeah. I mean, if we did that again, I've seen more movies since we last did it.
Which would be helpful.
And I've had more music knowledge than I've ever had before.
I feel like we were partly responsible for nudging you in that direction.
Yeah, no doubt. I went through this binge like in December. I think I got so tired of the Jags. I watched like 8 movies in a week.
Holy cow.
You guys would have been proud.
We would have been proud. At one point, you claimed to have not seen 8 movies.
In 20 years.
Right, yeah. In your life.
Yeah, well, that still might be the case in the theater.
Huh.
But I found this unbelievable, I don't think it's an invention by any means, but it was in my household that, like, the HBO and Showtime and all those channels got the package.
Oh, they have movies on
those.
They play them on your television.
Absolutely.
In your house.
Time, yeah.
Right, so you have options.
It's convenience.
Yeah.
Yeah. Broaden your horizon.
What a crazy set of movies they sometimes have on there.
Oh, I don't have any of those.
I can't figure it out. It's like, I think they pick, like, actors. Like, you know, they might have Tom Hanks movies
for
the week.
Kind of thing.
Right.
Is that how they do it?
Yeah.
Sometimes.
It'll be like a Tom Hanks month.
Yeah.
So they'll replay, like, The Burbs.
Yeah, you know? If it's Tom, like the Green Mile's on right now.
Right.
Well, you know it's Tom Hanks month because Donna Murphy calls in sick every day. She just doesn't come in. All right.
But anyway, I'm catching up. I just want to let you guys know.
Well, we're glad. We're dragging you into the 21st century. Brent Martineau, ladies and gentlemen, at BrentAS360 on Twitter. Just a general all-around good guy. Catch him this afternoon pulling double duty with that other crew in the afternoon. So for Brent, for Fat Tony, for Tyler Devitt, and Joe Fortunato, thanks to our sponsor on Wednesdays, Metro Rooter, for any size plumbing job, residential, commercial, industrial plumbing, you name it. Same day service, weekends included. You got a problem, they come out and fix it right away. The right people with the right equipment. Sounds simple. It's what's been keeping them serving Jacksonville so well since 1978. Visit MetroRooter.com or call 695-1911 for Metro Rooter for all your plumbing issues. Solve it with our Wednesday sponsor of Jaguars Today. Coming up next, the Midday Chalk. Stick around on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
You cannot lose games in the NFL and still win.
You guys have a good day. Peace.